Good morning, everyone. I'm Asha Nayaswamy, and here we are now in the middle of July 2020. We're still in the middle of the pandemic in the USA. Quite incredible. I was just talking to a friend of mine this morning about how many stages of acceptance we're all having to go through on this, because it just started out as just something temporary, but now months have passed and we're still in the middle of enormous confusion, and we don't even yet know what the implications are going to be going forward. I think I may have said I'm I think I said out loud, I've sort of pretending or thinking of it as if I've entered some kind of a strict monastic order that is making extremely different demands of me than normal, and trying to surrender into it with the attitude of this is what God has sent me, and therefore this is what I choose. And if this is the rest of my life, that's what it will be. Let me say a prayer, and then I'll add a few more thoughts to that. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, dearest friend Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow to you all. Bless us with the ability to open our hearts to your transforming presence. Help us to have the courage, the clarity, the wisdom in every situation to know what is right, what is in accordance with Dharma, what will bring light and happiness and joy into this world, that we may be the channels of your uplifting presence in all that we do. Om, peace, amen. We're continuing with the eight manifestations of God, and now we are talking about the quality of light. The first story that I was going to say before I stopped to pray is a very hard one, but it's always been deeply inspiring to me. Of course, most of you watching this know me well by now, and I have a certain intensity. I like to get to the bottom of things, and I like to push things to the limit. It's not the way everyone lives, but it is the way I live. And there's a man, I'm sure he's off the planet by now. His name was Richard Wurmbrand. He was Romanian. He was born into Judaism. And he converted then and became a devoted follower of Christ and a Christian pastor. He lived in the last century, and he was a young man during the Second World War, and he was persecuted as a Jew by the Nazis. Then in the division of that part of the world, Stalin ended up gaining control over his country, Romania, with a very brutal regime, and he was persecuted as a Christian. So a great deal of his life was spent either in prison or in some kind of pressured circumstances because of his spiritual faith. And had a wife named Sabina, and the two of them were extraordinary. That's the only thing I can say in terms of their courage and their faith and their willing to sacrifice. He wrote a number of books. The first one he wrote is called Tortured for Christ. Not exactly what you would call a popular title. Not the kind of things people just like pick up from a magazine shelf really easily. But that was the name of the book. And it was how he came to be in prison and some of his experiences. And his wife wrote a book called The Pastor's Wife. If you have an inclination for deeply inspiring but extraordinarily challenging true stories, I highly recommend both of those books. But there was one thing that Richard Wurmbrand described, and he was, people are evil. There are evil people, that's what I would say. And evil people find their way into circumstances where they can literally torture others for the sense of power and weird, perverse pleasure that it gives them. They're all God's children, and they're just walking through some very strange delusion, and then they find the karmic, the people whose karma it is to have those experiences. So Richard Wurmbrand was being tortured by the guards, and the way they were torturing him was they were forcing him to walk the circuit of his very small cell. He was a big man, you know, so his stride was large and a few steps one direction, a few steps another, a few steps this way, but not just once or twice, but hour after hour, depriving him of sleep, forcing him to do that. And as you can well imagine, and as he describes, it took extraordinary fortitude for him to persevere and keep walking. But what he describes eventually is the ecstatic experience that came to him through that. Because at first he was walking because the guards made him walk. But then he began to think about it more deeply, and he had to ask himself, would the guards be making me walk if Jesus weren't inspiring them to do it? In other words, does anything that happened to me happen outside the will of God? And I'm sure any of you who've listened to more than one of my talks have heard me raise that exact question, because that is, at least in the present moment for me, that has been the fulcrum point of all my introspection. Is anything that's happening to me outside the will of God? And of course, my answer is, God is in charge of everything. One of my friends said when this whole pandemic started and the whole world was turned on its ear in a matter of weeks, he said, no human agency could create this. It has to be Babaji. And it's true. I mean, whatever is going on, it's always Divine Mother. It's always God and Guru, always. So there is Richard walking the cell, and he's being, he thinks he's in, he's interpreting the experience as being compelled by the guards, and therefore a great deal of him is used up in resentment and resistance. But all of a sudden he realizes behind the guards has to be the presence of Jesus. And if Jesus were standing in front of him asking him to do this, would any part of him say no? And so from feeling oppressed and resentful, suddenly he's gloriously happy because Jesus has made a request of him, and he's getting to follow, he's getting to do what Jesus wants him to do. And then he just begins to describe literally the ecstatic state he went into, and he doesn't even know how long he walked around his cell because he just left time and place and went into ecstasy, even as his poor body just circled the room. Now, this is an attunement with the manifestations of God on a level that we, most of us, dream about, aspire to, perhaps, if we're honest, are terrified of. But nonetheless, that is the end of the story. So now we're talking about one of the most fundamental aspects of divinity, which is light. And light is a very interesting word because it has several different meanings. Light is a noun describing a phenomenon. I sit under certain lights so that I'm illuminated as I'm here. I go out into the sunlight and I see the power of the planet, the way the planet works, and then the sunlight disappears. Perhaps the moonlight comes. And then when I meditate, I put my attention at the spiritual eye and I do certain practices that allow me to see the inner light. And the inner light is not dependent on the senses. And the inner light is partly looking at the spiritual eye with its golden ring and its blue field and its white star. Not that I see it that clearly, but I know that's what it is. But light then is also a feeling that comes into us. And I don't get much of a feeling from the film lights that I have in front of me. I get more of a feeling from the sunlight. I get a different feeling from the moonlight. And of course, When I'm dealing with the light of the spiritual eye, and I sense its presence in me, whether or not I see it clearly, that is yet an entirely different experience of light. And in the Bible, the beginning, it says, "And the Lord said, let there be light. And there was light." And that's the beginning of creation. That's the creation story, that the first manifestation was light. Tomorrow we'll talk about sound, because in the book of John, in the New Testament, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So he's picking it up. He's picking divine reality up from sound. Genesis picks it up from the field of light. But if we become interested in the potential of light, it has such a rich and multivaried, so many different ways to grasp it. Photographers will go out to take their pictures at the time when the light is correct. I know sometimes walking through the green area on which this house borders in our community, early in the morning, late in the afternoon, you'll just suddenly be aware that there's a quality to the light. And I'm not a photographer, but I think about photographers and filmmakers and how they work so hard to capture the light, because then everything else that is reflected, that is illuminated by that light, will have some of the quality of that light. Isn't it just interesting? Just to sort of mull over all of this, I remember standing outside, I mean more than once, just sort of looking at the way the light affects my hands. And it's this multi-sensory experience that is, above all, at least for me, it's a feeling. That light itself, we think of it as an external reality, but it's an external reality that illuminates us inwardly, that creates a feeling within us that is exactly the same word. We have I feel light, you know, I feel illuminated within. You know, I feel shining. I feel like like I'm shining from inside. Swami Kriyananda said something that has been so interesting to me as a meditation. He was talking in general about the material world. And he says, everything in the material world is a symbol of a higher reality. Because the material world looks very big to us, and because we close our eyes to meditate and have this feeling that we are limiting our reality by closing off our senses, we tend to think of the material world as huge and as the inner world as somehow being smaller. Now, of course, if in closing off our senses and going to the spiritual eye, we liberate ourselves from the material world and we enter into, at least we touch the hem of the garment of the super consciousness of infinity, then it's not only that the inner world becomes vastly larger, the word larger doesn't even enter into the vocabulary. We've simply exited from limitation. And now you're in a place where there is no way to measure space. Because you're beyond there, whether you enter that for a long period of time or merely glimpse it from the edges, we understand that it's there. So Swami was talking again about everything being symbolic. He said the sun, you know, which illuminates our whole solar system, we wouldn't be able to live. We would have no life without the sun. The magnitude, the influence, the sheer size of the sun is but a symbol of the spiritual eye. I mean, a symbol. You think of a symbol like, you know, that little sign that you use instead of writing out the word "and." It's just like a symbol is just some tiny thing representing something, you know, something really huge. So to realize that the whole of the material world, the way a master described it, he said, the whole of the material world is like the little gondola, the little basket underneath a huge hot air balloon. And hot air balloons, a friend of mine was a balloonist, so I got to see these up close. I mean, it's so big, you can hardly comprehend how large it is. And if you ever go up in a balloon, which I did a few times with her, you are in this tiny little basket under this huge reality. And Master said that the whole material world, that means our solar system, our galaxy, all of the billions of galaxies that they are, everything that we know and don't know about the Earth and outer space, all of it is this tiny little appendage to the astral world. And the astral world is still a limited dimension. It's not in infinity. So this light that we're dealing with as a manifestation of God has a transforming power that provides us a lifetime of contemplation and meditation. And the more we do gaze into the spiritual eye and practice meditating focused on the spiritual eye, which is the method that Master teaches, and it's easy if you're watching this and don't know, if you connect with any Ananda entity, you can easily be trained online or in person, where the entire, well, I would say the entire focus of our lives, because meditation is the method by which we align our lives to our higher purpose. And so the entire focus of our lives is based on our relationship with light, because our relationship with light is the defining factor in our consciousness. And also it's taking the issue of consciousness and putting it right at its origin point. Let there be light, God said, and there was light. So our existence is the manifestation of light. And so when we seek, and I will say many of the same things about sound when I speak of it tomorrow, when we seek to be in tune with the divine, and when we speak to be instruments of the divine, a very simple question to ask ourselves is the question between light and shadow. Where do I stand? It's very interesting, because we tend to think of the opposites as light and dark. But once we start talking about light and dark, then we get into this question, is there a separate existence to darkness? You know, if in the beginning of creation it was let there be light and there was light, and if light is indeed the foundation of creation, how can there actually be darkness? So the sages define it perfectly, that darkness is only an appearance because of the absence of light. And it's if you move far enough away from the light source, you may think that the light has ceased to exist, but it has not ceased to exist. You've merely, I would say even better, you have turned your back on it. But more subtle, in Yogananda's, in Master's prayer, Samadhi, his poem, Samadhi, he says, and he's talking about the complete dissolution of this world of duality, and he defines duality this way: vanished the veils of light and shade. And that's just a wonderful way to think about it, because what is shade? It's bright sunlight. Come stand over here in the shade. And when you're standing in the shade, it's because something has blocked the light. The light has not ceased to exist. And the light has not diminished in any way at all. We've just gone behind a barrier, the veil, as Master calls it. We've stepped behind a veil, and now we feel like we're standing in the shade. And if we go deep beneath, I mean, if you crawl under the earth, it can be pitch black under the earth, but that doesn't change the light. When I was a child, I grew up in El Paso, Texas, and Carlsbad Caverns was not very far away. And my father liked regularity in his life. So from a very young age, and there weren't a lot of places to go that you could drive to from El Paso, but Carlsbad Caverns was one of them. So for many years, every year, at least once a year, we take a trip to Carlsbad Caverns, which was fantastic. This fantastic underworld of caves and so on. I understand now it's much more popular, and it's not quite as I remember it as a child because of the crowds. But there was a time, and maybe they still do this, when we would be underground with the guide, and they would turn off all the lights. And literally, you would play the game. You would put your hand up in front of your face, and it was so dark you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, which is a cliche to describe it, but it was pitch black because you were underground. But of course, the sunlight hadn't changed. We had just burrowed down into the ground, and so the shade, the block between ourselves and the light was so deep, we were under the impression that light had ceased to exist. But if we simply removed the block, the sunlight was unchanged. And so that's how we have to use the manifestation of light, whether we use it in an expression to others or whether we use it just to understand ourselves. It's not possible for me to actually go into the dark, but it is possible for me to go into the very deep shade. And so what I have to do in order to manifest light, which is to be in tune with light again, is I have to remove whatever I have allowed to come between me and the light. Because we have to realize also, the light is completely impersonal. The light is unconditional. The light is utterly, selflessly giving. The light does not decide. The divine light doesn't say, I'm going to shine here and not there. It simply shines. Always exactly the same. That's a very, also very important aspect of the divine, of the guru, of divine mother, that is a very rich and deep meditation, because we tend to think that God has his favorites, that master likes his saints better than he likes his struggling devotees, that God loves Richard Wurmbrand more than he loves the guards who are torturing him. And it's very hard for us to understand that unconditional love means that they are all equally loved by God. So it is not the divine that changes. The differences are how much we block that light. And so those guards who were torturing Richard Wurmbrand undoubtedly are deeply miserable in their souls. How could you not be? Even to want to hurt another person, to spend your time making people suffer, or in the company of people who are suffering, and they're suffering, and you have power to alleviate their suffering or to increase it. It's miserable beyond comprehension. What terrible torture must have been inflicted upon them. So it's not that God withdraws his love, it's that they are unaware of that love. And that's a loneliness beyond comprehension. And a lot of us have been there, if not in this, well, we've all been there. It's a loneliness beyond comprehension, which drives us finally to ask the right questions, to come out of the shade and to come into the light. And then we open ourselves, when we open ourselves completely, as Richard did in that terrible circumstance in the jail, then all the shade disappears. Circumstances didn't change, but his consciousness in his love for Jesus, he wasn't thinking about the spiritual eye, but he was living the spiritual eye. You know, yoga is a scientific fact that we discover. It's not a theology that we believe. It's a scientific fact that we discover. The heart beats, it pumps the blood. It's not a matter of theology. It's an observable fact. The presence of the light within us, its power to transform us, it's an experience. It's not an idea. It's an experience, and you can call it anything you want. You still experience it. It's universal. So in our efforts, the first thing we have to understand, this is what I was saying, is that that light is always there. And if I'm not feeling it, it is not because God has withdrawn it. It's because I have barricaded myself behind hurt feelings, anger, resentment, fear of disappointment, discouragement, lack of vitality, pain. Just make a long list. There's lots of reasons why we don't. And you see, one of the things about light, which is exceedingly interesting, is that no matter what our circumstances, I mean, in the bottom of Carlsbad Cavern, wherever you are, you have the spiritual eye within you. And as long as we live in a human body, we have access to that that level of consciousness. In fact, as sentient beings, for all sentient beings have access. Human beings have a nervous system that can see it. There is never a time when that light is not accessible to us. Now, whether we are able to access it depends on how we have trained ourselves and how intensely we cling to our delusions and how willingly we embrace the infinite. So use the light. And we use the light, and now I mean in these last few minutes, but it's obvious. Lightness. We bring lightness to a situation in our whole Education for Life system. We talk about the development of the children in terms of their lightness or heaviness. Lightness means how lightly they carry the ego. Whether the ego is a huge burden on them and they're constantly having to act only from what they want, they have a heavy consciousness. And those who have a light consciousness carry the ego lightly. It says, I know that I am this individual and I have this separate reality, but I carry it lightly. And I move through this world in a connection to this world with a lightness that enables me to have energy, to have love, calmness, peace, and joy. But light itself is an attitude that we can simply adopt. We walk into a situation and we take it lightly. We're cheerful. We serve. We use the other manifestations of God, but we see our role as to bring lightness. You know, how do we say to each other, lighten up, we say. But lightening up is not just telling jokes, because sometimes that's inappropriate. Lightness is a vibration that we emanate. And you see, vibrations don't have to be connected to words. They don't even have to be connected to actions. They just are what we are. And if we practice being in the light, then when we come into a situation, we bring lightness into it, and our vibration meets the vibration of others. And if it's strong enough, it literally converts them from the inside. And where people might have been feeling a little down and depressed, they don't feel so down and depressed when you're there, because you bring light into the situation. It's absolutely transforming. There is no power greater than the power of light. We often use a fire or a candle flame, you know, to symbolize it in our festival of light. We hold up a candle flame and say, gaze upon this light as a symbol of God's love. And I often think, because I have stood in our rather spacious temple holding that single candle, gazing upon that light as a symbol of God's love. And I'm aware, I mean, it's a candle flame, it's tiny. But that candle flame could transform that whole building into a pile of ash. I mean that's just physical power. If I touch that flame to the right places in that building and allowed that fire to just express itself, that whole building could be reduced to ash. It looks like it's nothing, but it has that power within it. And so it's a symbol of, if we just touch the hem of the garment of the divine light within us, all that shades us from that light will just be transformed as if it were never there. And then the unchanging light of spirit will become our unchanging reality. God bless you, my friends.